the second half history sessions. And this evening we're very pleased to welcome David and Robin Loxham, who have a very long involvement with this area. We've also got David's wife,
We've also got our sister sat up there, keeping out the way.
Your sister? Yeah. This isn't her right. Right. So quite a few members of the Loxham family. I've just put up on the screen something that we may refer to later, which shows us the area that we're talking about. I think most people are very familiar with that, but I thought that would be interesting. The session will be recorded, so I don't think anyone will have any exams about that, but we're putting them up on Fairfield website as a podcast, so the session is being recorded. This is not going to be a formal talk, as we had last time with Mike. It will be a question and answer session. A few people who are members of the audience have submitted questions in advance, and I've grouped those together and to use that as a framework for the evening. I felt we needed some structure to it. And they have got their questions with them and they will start the ball rolling. However, we are hoping that it will be very flexible and that other questions will arise and we may well deviate from the plan that I've got, and that is absolutely fine. I also think there might be some answers coming from the audience. So if there's a question that is asked and you can add to that, then that's great as well, because all of this information will be going on the web. And I think what we will have, is quite an interesting piece of oral history on the Fairfield website, which people can then go back to later. So I'm going to start us off with the first question, and was Ian, could you get me onto the next slide? Could you get me onto the next slide if I'm doing the question?
Do you mean the first slide?
Yeah. Right.
There's only two.
I can't do the slide and talk at the same time. Right. So this is a question that actually came from Margaret. I'll read that already. Which is really to try and put the evening into context and to say, we've heard that your family have farmed the land for five generations. Mm-hmm. Is this correct? And could you outline your family background for us? And I've put a little list of names up there that perhaps you could fill in. I will say that Pam told me that one of these characters was quite a character and was very much like Del Boy. maybe she's speaking after him. Anyway, can I hand over to you now?
Yeah, I think, my great-granddad was at... my great-great-granddad was at Cowes Farm. And prior to that, the people that farmed it were on the wife's side. I think it was the Deans or somebody that were tenants before my great granddad. So they were there. How many generations they were there, I understand, was two to three. But they were Deans, and I can't remember the other side of it, but. In other words, they were on the female side, and then my great granddad came in after that.
Okay.
Yeah. So a bit of an hand down through family as such. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was your great grandfather's name?
Great grandfather's name was Robinson Loxham.
Right. Yeah. That's one of them. Yeah. Who died in 1945?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So he's your great grandfather.
He was great grandfather. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, and we go back. Okay, and they were.
And his father, I think, was called. What was he called? Thomas, was he?
I think he was called Thomas.
Thomas, and he was a butcher, by trade, farmer butcher, and he lived in Dalton Square, and his butcher shop was in Dalton Square.
Right, so was it that the butchers also farmed?
I'm not sure. Yeah, yes, they farmed, but it was through family. And I think it was on the female side of the family that was the farmers, and he was a butcher. Mm. Mm. Yeah.
Do you want to add to that, David?
Yeah, great-grandfather, Robinson Loxham, served his time with my great-grandfather, and he then sort of took over the shop for a while. Then he went into farming full time, but he kept up the butchering trade on a part-time basis. My grandfather did tell of a tale at one time. He was still at Lancaster Market at 11 o'clock on Christmas Eve, trying to sell ducks, turkeys and such like. And he was reluctant to leave until he sold them all. But I believe we had a rather good Christmas.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Do we want to move on?
Can I ask
about this?
Was this all
rented
farmer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who were the owners? Ripley Estate?
Ripley Trust owned the land. Because when we first tried to get hold of Carr House, Ripley Trust were rather reluctant. One, that great-grandfather was a cattle dealer, and two, we were already tenants at Ripley Farm, and they didn't want us sort of making a cooperative of it.
Yeah, because they had several farms, because there were several brothers, and they had Ripley, Eden Breck, Carr House, Newlands Farm, Langthwaite,
Marsha Farm.
They had several, and they had to give them up in when the Second World War started, because it was compulsory that you had to plough so much land, and they, you know, they hadn't got the facility, you know, the staff or whatever to do that. So if you couldn't do it, you had to hand them back. So I think they only own two, Eden Breck, Carr House, and Ripley, would it be?
Yeah.
I think that was the only farms that they farmed, you know, shortly after the war.
So
the rest were given
up.
Ripley Farm was in where the school is now.
Yeah. And the hospital.
Yeah. So it's all built on now, really.
Yeah.
By.
Yeah.
Where is the dog and partridge at? Is that still six alive?
No, dog and partridge
is the
Temperance
Hotel.
Yeah.
Temperance.
Yeah, Qualmer, yeah. Yeah.
According to the internet, Robinson Lobson was born in Qualmer in 1868.
Yeah, that would probably be right, yeah. 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 I don't know what farm he would be on at that point in time, whether it would be Newlands or.
No. It was Conder Side.
Oh, yeah.
Some land was farmed from the Dog and Partridge, I think.
It could have been, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a small bit of farmland with the Dog and Partridge.
Yeah.
And that land was only enclosed in about 1815 from Qualmer Common.
Right. Uh-huh.
Westminster.
Sorry?
The ones
who
land
around
there,
the
Westminster.
Kelsall's.
Oh,
yeah.
They don't actually own the houses, but they own the land at the back.
Yeah. There's one question was, and we got Adrian Gifford here tonight, and that was about the other farms round about where they all tenanted, and they were. And one question was, who was your landlord, Adrian, do you know?
Well, it was the Dawson Estate.
It was Dawson Estate, was it?
Well, I think it was an architect lived at Audley Hall.
Right.
It was part of the town and demolished in the 50s. And he bought the home farm.
Right.
Dawson's owned from Denmark Street, right through to Stoddard Grange. And in no sons, but five daughters. And the last daughter died in 1962. And then it was inherited by a nephew in Kent, Geoffrey Harris, who sold it, or took him 12 years to get to, because he wasn't a father off the farm, and Fred Lewis, Brookhall, to be right. 20 acre. And but there was no compensation. Roy Moore from Harrisonism Moore came and told us we've got 6 months for the land and 12 months for the house.
So you're tenant farmers,
yes.
But you were potentially evicted by the landlord. The landlord wanted to...
Well, in those days, in the 60s, you could compulsory purchase a house and you couldn't compensate the... We couldn't do it with the farmers. Farmers were not in that scheme at all. Mm. And it was more or less, that's the time you got. They could, at their discretion, give you a year or 2 years' rent as compensation. And we were very fortunate to have a man from West End Nursing Home who on that called John Bates, who fought the case for 12 years until one day the landlord turned up and there was quite a time when my father told him he could have the land if he got his hand in his pocket, which he did. So that is where Abel Hyde's estate is now. Unfortunately, the landlord didn't live long enough to enjoy his money because he was only very young, so British, and he died very suddenly. There's still a chunk of that land which you've now got, the Fairfield Association, which wasn't developed from the Kendall Pad fields up to the Crown.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And I can see that where it says Lancaster, yeah. And it's green, that was land we used to farm, right? And you can see the footpath that went through from Sunnyside, Dean Wreck, which comes out at Orchard Hall Lodge by the canal.
Yeah.
There's a little space there, well, that is probably still owned by about the town's daughters.
Yes, the bit that's not part
the bit that's
yes.
not shaded
from
in.
The track, from the track up to the start of Flora.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was often, as I say, probably still in by Orchard Hall Estate.
Orchard Hall Estate, yes.
Yeah.
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 Did you mention that the land was owned by the Daltons?
No.
Dawson. Isn't the boundary between the shaded bit and the plain bit on the south, is that not the old boundary of Lancaster?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to show you where the boundary was.
Yeah.
I'm going to point this here. I'm wrong, the old township boundaries, they called it. Ran along here, and that was Oldcliff on this side, including that field, and Lancaster on this side, including Caverbank.
So, what's the boundary between just a bit slightly above the track? Because you said before that track used to bend down to Oldcliff Hall.
Yes, yes.
And then it was.
Then it got rerouted, I think, along the boundary.
Yeah. Ah, right.
There's a boundary stone there, isn't there? Still stream field.
Yeah. Well, that boundary has moved around. It's different on the first Ordnance Survey map and on the second Ordnance Survey map. So it's a moving target, I'm afraid. But it then went off down here somewhere around Haverbrook.
Well, I was always told, though, that was truth, isn't it, that we both called it Kendall Patfields. And it was supposed to come by, you know, hearsay over the years. The follow similar track. The Packhorse track, which came from Preston to
Kendall.
We went down there, watched House of the Side Lane, all by the castle, down to China Lane, and across the river. Mm-hmm. How true that is, I don't know. You've seen all the maps, you probably know it.
Well, there's a deed from the 14th century, 13 something, or other, a grant to Furness Abbey, by which somebody leaves a couple of strips of land up here. Beside the green road to Oldcliff, and that would be the route used by the monks at the Priory, St Mary's Priory, Lancaster, the Priory Church, through along the old track to Oldcliff Hall, because they owned Oldcliff, that had been given to them by the Norman lords. So it was certainly that, whether it was used as other things as well, I don't know.
Okay. I seem to have dotted about a little bit. I think I might come back to another question of Ruth's, which is about Eden Brett. Do you want to ask that question, Ruth?
It might have been covered actually on the slide of the different family members, because I'd asked how long have the Loxtons been farming at Eden Brett? But looking at the slide that was up there before, it looks as if it was about 100 years.
Yeah, will have been, I would say, maybe a bit longer, maybe, yeah.
And then my other question is called next to that is, what size of family would have lived in the house? Because I know sort of 100 years ago, might have had like a family of 13 kids or something.
I don't know who was, you know, my memory only goes back to my great uncle, really, my granddad's brother. And he had a family, small family, only two, boy and a girl. And he farmed it for, I don't know, it's about 1950s, I think. Uh-huh. And then he bought a farm at Carnforth, at Cragbank, because it was, you know, it was too small, and you know, city council wouldn't sell it, so he bought one, Cragbank.
I just wondered, with it being such a small building, when I know that's the phrase such a.
Yeah, but
you can imagine the, you know.
Yeah, I think they probably milked maybe. I think he maybe milked 15 cows down there.
Right,
it was a dairy farm.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. No, he actually milked more.
Did he?
I don't know. Because at the end of the yard, there was.
Oh, that red brick building.
Red brick building.
Well, the one that you've made into your store, that was a shipping as such, yeah.
Right.
And that would have held 12.
12.
Yeah, so he would milk maybe 20. Yeah.
Now, just when I said Lancaster, there's a strip goes through. Now, that was a separate field. It belongs to the Prisoners' Aid Society. So we should pay the rent separately to this organisation down in London. How they obtained it, whether it was a gift or what, I don't know, but it was to help. Prisoners.
Well,
back then, there weren't many organisations that would help prisoners.
But you didn't have prisoners helping you work You just paid the rent to them.
Why they own the land, and it's split the farm, actually.
Yeah, it was. That land was owned in strips back in medieval times, and then got aggregated into bands of land. And that bit through there was owned by a woman who gave it for charitable purposes, originally to support prisoners, and then they changed the terms of the charitable gift so as it could be prisons after they'd served their sentence, and then it went to NACRO, obviously, as the successor.
There were others like that, because Edenbreck, behind Diggy Lane, there was 4 acres there, until W.E. Pinchers bought it, that belonged to a charity.
Which is Piggy Lane?
Westbourne
Road and Sunnyside Lane.
Westbourne
Road
and Sunnyside Lane. The hill.
Up
past Edenbreck.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this the Piggy Lane? Yeah. Sorry.
Yes. Joy. The question I was going to ask has been answered, but the two farms, Edenbreck and Carhouse Farm, quite close together. How big were they? Did they extend? You said 4 acres for Edenbreck. How big were farms then? What did you farm? Were they mixed farms?
They were all pretty small farms. Your sort of average size farms in this area anyway would be about 60 acres.
And were they mixed?
And they were mixed usually, yeah. Yeah.
Carhouse Farm was broadly that area,
yeah,
and Edenbreck was a very odd shape. It was that plus that bit down there.
Yeah.
Wasn't it very wet?
Not as wet as it is now. Just that we, you know, we were poor farmers, so we never we didn't drain it properly. It sort of, well, I certainly was anyway.
Well, you turned the beck into part of your garden.
Mick has a question about the land drains. Do you want to ask a question about the land drains, Mick?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the one that's there, actually. It's a different one. David was telling me some time ago that there was some kind of culvert that ran down Sunnyside Lane and through the yard next to the cottage, through the paddock and out into the big meadow.
Yeah.
I was hoping that he would tell us a bit more about that.
Well, it does. It's a large stone culvert. It's about 2 foot wide, covered with massive stone slabs, and it runs all the way down to Lucy Brook. And we once lifted and uncovered the whole of the length from Lucy Brook to the paddock at Edenbreck, which is quite a mammoth task when you consider that the size of the stones were roughly 18 inches wide and about 4 foot long, just rough hewn stones, and then packed in between with stones that would fit the gap and close the gap up so that soil wouldn't trickle down into the bottom and block it all up again.
And of course we now have bundled up. that's how we created order pot.
Yeah.
By bunging that drain.
Yeah.
You didn't really needed to bung it up because it used to bung up a bit that much.
I think Ian also
asked
a question about the stone slabs. Yeah. I think you had a question, didn't you, about what was produced on the farm, whether it was all dairy or whether there was crops grown.
Well, I was thinking that farms around Lancaster would be predominantly dairy.
Yeah.
To serve the town with milk and dairy products.
Yeah.
Is that the case?
Yeah. Yes, it was the case, yeah. Edenbreck, Adrian's farm, they were all dairy farms. Lewis's, they were all dairy. And in 1950, I think your question was in 1950, because of new hygiene standards that, a lot of farms were now in the business, dairy farms, and that would be the case because City Council, who were our landlords at that time in 1950, they said that they would, because they were landlords of Edenbreck, and we were my granddad were the tenants of City Council, that they would only spend the money on one farm rather than both places, so that they would bring Carrar's farm up to standard, but Edenbreck was to be left as it was, and basically put a demolition order on Edenbreck for the buildings at that time, which were never carried out, but it was supposed to be just the cottage to be left there, and the land was basically tagged to Carhouse, and then they spent the money on bringing Carhouse up to date in hygiene the new hygiene scheme, and I think that in them days they spent quite a lot of money because they redeveloped all the what were trashy old buildings and brought them up to
so
19.
Milking equipment and
yeah
no
yeah.
They
didn't put the milking equipment in, but they did a little concrete and it had to be a sealed surface.
The concrete,
particularly the testing of the milk for two bovines and
tuberculosis.
I know this because my first wife actually caught bovine tuberculosis just after her father, who was a dairy farmer, had installed all this equipment. Some other blooming farmer didn't. But it across the country, as I understand it, this kind of bringing up of hygiene standards meant that lots of small farms were just not viable. So it did lead to a rationalisation of farming. And it sounds as if from the Edenbreck and Carhouse example here, this is just what
happened.
Yeah, and I don't think I can't remember, but Ripley, it wasn't brought up to that sort of standard either. And I think that's why they packed in milk, and that was my uncle that was at Ripley Farm, yeah.
But it
wasn't actually compulsory to go TT tested.
No.
For another 20 years after.
Yeah, 55. But what Ian's saying is they had to be brought to that new standard.
In 1950. Ripley was to a certain extent.
I can't remember.
David, you were telling me today about also using the fields on hover brakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you just explain that again? Because you were telling me this morning about
well,
that.
Well, Haverbricks estate, as it was, had a large Victorian villa with its own courthouse and stables and a paddock to graze the horses. And we, my grandfather, managed to get hold of the tenancies of all the various paddocks on Haverbricks so that we could graze young stock there. And also, we did a deal with Nazareth House because they had a number of fields round Nazareth House where they used to grow potatoes, so they were self-sufficient, being an Irish sisters of the poor were the nuns there, and they had a caretaker come farmer, and they had it all set in potatoes, but they'd let the hedges just go wild. And my grandfather did a deal where he would get the fields for a reduced rent if all the hedges were laid and brought and tidied up and made good again, because in some places the hedges there you could walk right, you could literally walk from the Brettage Drive clean through the hedge. They were there. Such a good boundary.
So you used to take the cattle up into Haverbricks, did you?
Yeah. We just used to drive them all along the road, close all the house gates to various drives, all the way up Oakleaf Road and through Haverbricks. And if we'd done it late in summer, it was quite surprising the number of people that just came flying down Oakleaf Road, turn in, and sometimes, I saw it twice, but usually it was slam on the brakes and somebody's charging out the car thinking, who the bloody hell shut me gates?
Yeah, we did.
We always call it Barrows Hill, and we also, it was the Sourholm as well. Which was
Up through Sourholm.
Up through Sourholm.
And then back of that house, the you know, the one with the funny old roof, the launching pad for a roof.
Yeah.
Down that back lane.
You didn't have a chance of buying the land.
No. And then over the bridge.
Back of the house's house.
Young stock and hay time, really, yeah. Down Haverbricks Hill,
yeah.
We're loaded with hay,
What breed of cattle did you use?
Friesians. Originally, it was Shorthorns in this area.
Was it?
Yeah.
And then about 19, right after war, British Friesians or got popular, and my great granddad, he was the first to introduce them, actually just before the war, into Lancashire. He was the first guy to bring them into Lancashire, and up to then it was predominantly Shorthorn.
Ian, I think you had a question about. Oh, sorry.
I was going to ask about milk. And were you dairymen as well? And did you
see just about everybody around, like Adrian, they processed their own milk and had a milk round as we did.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a bit of a battle in them days because he used to pinch our customers.
He's never forgotten it, has he?
No,
I've
never forgotten,
has he?
Andrew,
pre-war, before the milk had been born, it was the processors, which are Cadbury's, Fry, Bradford Co-op and so on, used to come up. So, grandfather didn't watch this year, we'll give you a shilling a gallon or whatever. And then the milk board came in and made sure it was a level playing field for everybody. The farmer got a set price, the wholesale retail. But prior to the milk wagon board, farmers, the only way they could make a decent living on a small farm was to start milking.
Yeah.
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 Yes. Yeah.
It was in the days of the milk round,
was there a milk round
with the whole of Lancaster? It did, yeah. I had a milk round with a hand cart round Sylvester Street, Simpson Street, Ringgate Hill Road, before I went to school.
Before you went to school?
Before I went to school.
What about you two? Where did you do?
Well, as soon as I could drive, I did the, you know, the driving route. But it didn't. Milk ground was massive. It went top of Scotforth, you know, round by College of Knowledge. We went everywhere just to drop, you know, 2 pints of milk on. It was quite a big round. It was, yeah.
Father had this idea that he wouldn't lose a customer, but if he followed the customer to where they moved to, he might pick up one or two more.
We were the latest milk. I was anyway, because I never started delivery, did I? Yeah, I was. Till about 11 o'clock was my start. finished about 4 o'clock.
Great.
Yeah. We used to bottle by hand.
Yeah.
Uncle Thomas at Ripley, he went modern. He had a bottling machine. Two on, filled, and it was so much easier.
Collected into churns. Any excess milk was actually taken to Queen Street dairy. And my father used to take that sort of in the van. But the raw milk came into the dairy. It was filtered initially and went into the milk churn. And then it was bucketed into the old-fashioned cooler, which was filtered over a surface, all the water surface out of the bottom, and the cool milk was collected into another churn. Or you could fill your bottle from a little nozzle as it came down through the cooler, and it was stacked in the crate, and then the silver top with the locks and name on the top of it was put on, and then it stamped, which sealed it round the bottle, and then you were ready for off.
Did you have some?
I used to take 2 crates of 20 pints and a crate of half pints. Sometimes I would run out because the evening milk hadn't. It was the evening milk that I used to take. So Mum, Dad, Robin, David would go around and finish off the round if I hadn't enough milk. But we used to sell a lot of half pint bottles even in the late '60s as well, early '70s I suppose was when I was in.
I just can't imagine how many hours of work that was to fill the bottles before you even
start. It didn't take all that long. It didn't take all that long.
Same today when I was a kid, though.
I was just going to say, if anybody saw the film Moomin, he was still doing it by hand.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was a fascinating insight.
That's the sheer.
Yeah.
But then when he got his bottling
machine, he made a fantastic.
Oh, yes. Ian, I think you also had a question to ask about when you got tractors, and have you got a special fondness for Fergies? Because you said, was it a Fergie?
Well, I lived in Coventry for over 30 years when they made Fergie right. chapters.
Well, it was a Fergie.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be.
And it was where
was it? What difference did it make?
About 1960, I think it was.
Yeah. Was just 1960?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we were the last farm to have a horse.
Yeah.
And
Adrian, he was modern. He had a tractor a long time before.
I was driving the Ferguson petrol tractor when I was 8 or 9
years old. Yeah.
I used to keep me off school till Haytown.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was first in this area to get. Well, no, Brian Macrath was.
Brian Macrath had the baler.
He had the baler, and then you bought one.
Ah, we got one.
Yeah. So we used to borrow his.
Were you producing hay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For winter feed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that mean you were self-sufficient with animal feed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apart from
concentrates.
Concentrates that you had to feed them, then that was bought in, obviously.
Yeah.
We did used to collect the brewer's grains from Mitchell's Brewery in Lancaster.
Oh.
On a daily basis, which we used to feed to the cattle.
Mm. Yeah, I've forgotten that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the. That was in. Were the 1764, what do they call that pub, 16?
Yes.
Blue Anchor, just behind Blue Anchor it was, yeah.
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 Next to Ann Summers, there is a little alleyway. Now, where Ann Summers stands in Market Street, there used to be the New Inn. And there was an alleyway there. And even after the predestinisation of Penny Street and Market Street, my father could never manage the tractor and trailer and reverse it down there, so it became my job to go down, back the tractor and trailer down, load the brewer's grains, and then up Market Street, up Meeting House Lane, down Dallas Road and into the farm. But one time it was Mitchell's centenary and he brewed a certain brew, Mitchell's Centenary Ale, and he tapped off a pin in number one cellar, which was just by the stand where you loaded brewer's grains. And I knew one or two of the brewery workers, and one came round and he says, "Have you tried this new ale?" And I said, "No, we have to try this." And went round the corner, we've got it here tapped off, and it was a quart jug. He pulled out his quart jug, "Try that." So, I had this quart jug. "You want another one?" "Oh, go on then." So I had the second one. I don't really remember the trip back to the farm. And I was at work, because at that time I was working at Stories. I had to get to Stories and do a day's work there as well.
That was the good thing about the horse, it knew its way up.
Yeah, the tractor didn't. There was another incident up Market Street as well, many years ago. We had a friend of ours, he used to work for us at one time, chap called Norman Freeman, and he had a little holding over on Halton Road, and he had kept hens and pigs, and he used to borrow our Bamford muck spreader of a Friday night, dump it at his place, load it with a mixture of hen manure and pig manure, and then it was my job to go over there, and he then brought the tractor back, and it was my job to go over there on the Saturday morning, collect this muck sprayer and bring it back through to the farm. Now, it was in the days before Lancaster was pedestrianised, and all the bus stops were up Market Square in front of Littlewood Store, and the council or the water board or somebody had been doing some work outside Bait and Ghost Chemists, and they'd left a rather large pothole. Now, it didn't tend to hang around with the tractor, it was always full throttle, and the one of the back wheels of the muck spreader dropped into this pothole. Now, it was the mechanisms for spreading the manure were run on the wheels. The conveyor didn't start, but the spring-loaded chain drive for the back flyers dropped in and momentarily engaged. I was wearing an old duffel coat with the hood up. It was sort of early spring, and it was quite cold on the tractor, and I knew there was something wrong when I felt this spatter up my back, and I thought, I'm not stopping. And I'm hoping the lights at Smith's Corner are green. And I shot through there, up Milking Star, up Meeting House Lane, down Dallas Road, through the, into the yard, straight along into the field, and very quickly got rid of the evidence. Parked up the tractor, and then that afternoon I went back into town. It was still swilling down in front of Littlewood Store. I'd given it a good coating, and the people that were behind the bush shelters had fared fairly well. Those, because the queues were quite large there, and those that weren't in the queue behind the bush shelters would have liked to have got hold of me, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think moving swiftly on. we need to move on a little bit. Nick has some quite a few questions about the various structures on the land. I think we could just change direction a bit, and you could ask about those a bit. I think there's this odd concrete thing that puzzles us, isn't there?
Yes, okay. I think you both know about these already, but if you go up the public footpath along Pants towards Orpeth Road, just before you get to the track, there's a bit of concrete wall on the right. It's been suggested that that might actually be an example of very early concrete. There was somebody in the late 19th, early 20th century who was an experimenter in concrete. And so we're trying to find out anything about when anybody knows when it was put there and why.
We've always known it, it's there.
So it's been there for your life.
Yeah.
So that
suggests
that it is
there. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was a field which we found called Sacks. That short piece of wall, there was a gap in it, did you notice? Yep. There was a large tree there that came down. And I've always known that there. Now, Orchard Falls and Westbourne House are solid concrete.
Yes.
Right, and I mean, the hall's gone, but so in your Dawson were in the hall probably about 1860s or 70s. And that was whether it was left over from that, I don't know. I know Westbourne House must be about 120 years old now, because I remember Professor Millian's father was there. And he came back from America for 5 days to have a party for the house because it was 100 years old. And so that's for about 20 odd years. And I think E.B. Dawson must have been involved in this concrete. So I would think the wall is going back prior to, you know, the 1900s.
Mm-hmm. He was a pioneer of concrete building. He built several concrete cottages.
Oakley Village.
In Stoddy, aren't they, I think?
Stoddy Village, Oakley Village, were they concrete?
Yep, yep, there's a bunch of concrete cottages there, which are quite early examples of concrete building.
We all know villages, of course.
The other construction that we're interested that's in is the one that's very close to Orpith Road. In,
just about there.
Yeah.
About well, that's water. That particular farm, where the stone trough is, was rented from E.B. Dawson estate by a cattle dealer, whose name escaped me. They used to bring cattle over from Ireland to Wheatfield Street, and there were stock companies there, weren't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, or else they bought some at the auction and we'll put them in there till they got them onto the train. And of course, in those days, you walked them from the top of town, wherever you went, you didn't hire vehicles to take them. There was no water in that field, so he must have built a stone trough to pipe water.
But one of the things that's odd about it is that it's divided up inside with little brick walls.
I don't know what that is. If you go further on, so you're facing it, the canal behind you, go to your left, there's some marsh, there's a spring there.
Yeah.
And it runs parallel to the wall, and it's a stone drain, with my belly done. And it runs alongside the hedge, next to the lane which goes, what do we call it, Sourell. Runs near there, and there's a trough. And it goes a bit further on to what used to be the business aid field. There's another trough. And it's still there. Yeah. There's also a house on Oakcliff Road which has a well. And when the well fills, it overflows into the troughs.
Mm-hmm. Do you know which house it is?
I'm afraid I can't help you now. I don't think it's Kitchen's house. It is one. I think it's one next to it. The big house, you know where George Howson is?
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's another one. Well, the big house there belongs to a surgical kitchen.
Yeah.
And I think it's the house next to that.
Yeah.
Which has the well. I'm not certain, but I know if it overflows, if you have heavy rain, it would fill that guy. Now, from there's also a drain which someone's put in from a stone trough to feed into that. The concrete one we're talking about will feed into the stone one. So the two drains sort of join together. Mm. And then it goes under the hedge, leaves the prisoner's air field, it drops down the hill, but it does not go into the beck.
That's the beck, isn't it?
It doesn't go into this road. It goes near to the bottom of the hill and turns left. And you know where the gates are? Where the paths, there's obviously been two gates across the road. You don't look right. There's a manhole there, it's still there.
Yeah.
And that drain goes under the pads and turns left towards what before.
Towards this way.
Yeah, yeah. So if you go down into the beck, probably within
15
foot or something. As I say, it comes along to that manhole, under the pads, and then bears left towards the hall.
Along this.
No, it goes straight to the field. If you go into that field, you'll find there's a manhole there.
Yeah.
Because it flooded for about a third of that land, and we found out that it was a broken pipe. But we never found out where it went, so we just dropped it into a field drain and put it back in the bed. But years and years ago, there used to be a reservoir up at Orpith Fall.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, whether they drew water from that, I don't know, but there's so many springs in and around Lancaster. But I can tell you where the drains are there.
somebody told me that they used to pump water up from the manhole at the bottom up to Alton Court. Would that be right?
Because probably.
Because it's quite a bit higher.
I remember a fellow called Mark Airy, who spent the whole park in the dozens of one line on that town and river. And when we said to him, you know, are you losing any water? And we didn't know what it was. Because he was concerned, he didn't know what it was. So we just diverted it away. And we drained all that field out. What other information there, John?
Could I ask my question about why Lucy Brook is culverted just at that dog? It's just about in the area that we're talking about.
That bit
I mean, it's about 50 yards, 50 metres, in which it's culverted, which is quite a big thing to cover a stream with stone. It must have been for a good reason, but I can't fathom out what the reason is.
It was basically because just at that point, there was, I think there's about four common gateways, and it made a roadway for Roger and Adrian's tractors and such like to get through from one field to another just at that point.
So when are we talking about?
It's all, we've known it as being culverted all the time.
I've always known that
part of the footpath to have been culverted. Yeah. So it must have been, it's been there 100 years.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of problems flooding into Brook Street and Cromwell Road.
Still does.
Yeah. Still does.
I think it was done many years before the war, I think, that it was probably done to help clear the water away so they didn't back up.
Yeah, maybe he had on them.
Could I ask questions? A couple of questions about the Pony Wood. One was the structure that was in. There's a lot of stones in Pony Wood that obviously come from a structure, the dressed stone. So one question was, does anybody know what that was? We can still see that there.
Which is Pony Wood?
Pony Wood, there.
Oh, there? No, I'm sorry, I can't help you with that one. I never knew it was called Pony Wood.
Well, there was seven questions about Pony Wood.
It was a wood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Woody wood.
That's that. So there has been a structure there which we can still see the remnants of on the ground. Mm-hmm. Nobody has any idea.
No.
What
no. We know there was about one. There was one in the Sauron, bottom of the Sauron.
Down here.
Down in that bottom corner there, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was a coach house. It was covered for a. So I think you've seen it now where it Lucy Brook runs, where you diverted it. In that corner there was an old building there.
Lucy Brook actually
went through it, yeah. Yeah, I think it's overgrown now, but...
Is it the bottom of Cromwell Road?
No, nearly the bottom of your garden, actually.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
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 There is a building there, so what was that?
It was a coach house.
Coach house.
Yeah. Oh. So who it serviced, I've no idea, but obviously they could only go out
that
at the top.
The
top. Yeah.
But for a long time, there was two horse traps in there for years and years.
Yeah, we used to play on them as kids.
Yeah.
But they got nicked or disappeared or whatever.
No, grandfather sold them.
We are running out of time, and there was a question that I think Mike had asked, which
I think Mike was talking today about in the bar a couple of weeks ago. Well, I was asked to suggest some possible themes for historical studies, which I did in my talk a couple of weeks ago. going backwards. And the first one I suggested was oral history. And I thought people might be interested in talking about the situation in a farm that was on the edge of an urban area during the Second World War, when clearly there must have been pressures given the food shortages and the controls and the very ambivalent attitude of the government as well towards a little bit of gentle black marketeering. And I suggest that might be an area which people would now be happy to comment on, and I think would be particularly valuable to try and get a take on what it was like then.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
Well, grandfather got fined 5 shillings for selling a pint of milk off ration. But my grandfather was talking about it one time. I asked him, about the times, and he said, "Well, we sold so much milk it was rationed. But at the end of the day, we still had milk. And if we didn't feed it to the pigs, it went sour. And people had money and had needs. And if they came down and said, 'Have you got a spare pint of milk?' they got a spare pint of milk. So long as they brought the wrong jug." And that's how... He also told me that just under the bridge during the war, there was the drill hall. And the drill hall was, on paper, had a complement of 40 men. And that's what rations were sent for, this complement of 40 men at the drill hall. But the sergeant there said, "We've never had 40 men since 1939, but they still send us rations." And my grandfather said, "Oh, now, you get a gallon of milk a day." "Yeah, that's what we..." "Well, would you like to... do you want more?" "Yeah, but we're only allowed a gallon a day." "That's not the question." "Do you want more?" "Yes, we'll... but you'll be able to make arrangements." And arrangements were made. A gallon of milk was sent in a 2-gallon can. A gallon of milk was emptied, and we collected the 2-gallon can, which weighed, according to my grandfather, a lot heavier than what a 2-gallon of milk would be. And in it, there would be ham, legs of ham, or it would be filled to the brim with flour, or sugar, or anything else that happened to be spare. And the garrison got 2 gallon of milk, because apparently the sergeant was fond of milky coffee. And that was one of the arrangements that we had with the drill hall.
Robert, were you going to add anything to that?
Well, no, it was just a fact of life, if you, you know, it just went on.
Can I say that it wasn't just farms, there was... I know one farmer from another stackhouse, and Alan kept us in during the war. And the police turned up one day and said, "Well, have you any ham?" And Alan said, "No, nothing to kill yet." "Why?" "Well, our sergeant's retiring, we want to give him a ham and make supper." Then down the supply and get some, they've got to come from outside. And the duly orders hand plus whatever. And the wagon turned up in the middle of the night. I said, Mike, haven't you got some pull, haven't you? He said, why? He said, well, pull them all up. All wagons were checked, traveling at night. We pull them all up on carpet level. And we put a bed carpet. And the policeman going down with a torch. You, on your way. And that was the wagon. Alan had given the number to the police.
I have a friend at Chorley, and his dad was this. He was the sergeant, and it was a lot to do with police in them days. And they used to the Black Mariahs used to pick up swill, pig swill, and they put and this guy was a farmer and a policeman at the same time, and they used to the Black Mariahs used to pick up the swill, they feed his pigs that went back into you know, they would slaughter them, and it was all whacked out, you know, with police force and their friends, you know. That was a big operation. and he was in league with the town clerk, surely. Yeah, so that's how sort of, yeah.
Yeah. Well, moving swiftly on again. I think we do really need to wind up because we've gone beyond the 8:30, which we said. But Kathy, I think you had the final question, didn't you? Do you want to ask it?
Yeah, I wasn't sure really how to word it, but I just was wondering about how people who farm the land have an affinity with the land. It seems like most farmers never retire. They just keep going on the land.
And so how you is a fact.
Because they have no money. A lot to do with it is because it's a way of life, and that's it. A lot to do with it because they're tenant farmers and they know where else to go, you know, because perception is that, you know, farmers make lots of money, and, you know, they're always wealthy, and, you know, and that, but not really, they weren't, no.
And
it's just a way of life as well.
A farmer that owned his land, on paper, was a wealthy man. But all his money was in his land. And he would have to sell his land, sell his stock, so he had some money, so he could retire. But to make that decision.
And he usually has a family to hand it on to, and so it continues.
Yeah.
You know,
who was
it?
You said died in the shipping. When was that?
Grandfather.
Your granddad died in the shipping.
Yeah, 84, I think. 84. 85.
So he was still working.
He was still working.
Yeah. He actually fell in the muck barrel.
He was.
he had a massive heart attack and fell in it.
Well, I think that is a very good place to end.
Well, Fraser actually found him. Yeah, he found him, and he was, you know, he'd just gone into Muckborough, and he's, yeah.
Over the affinity with the land.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think I'd like to thank you very much to Robin and David for giving us a very interesting evening, and that's going to just keep you. Can you save it for Christmas?
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Save that for Christmas.
I actually brought this along. I don't know whether this is just interesting. This is an old Stone Age axe.
Oh, and brings it out.
And we found three on the farm.
Wow.
Gosh.
Yeah. So it's.
Yes. Can I just hold it?
Yeah, I have three of those.
It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
You did have all the machinery.
You did have all the machinery. I think some of us might have a drink in the bar after, so please stay behind and chat if you want to. But I'd just like to say.